The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast. This is Kevin McNamara with Bill Koch. Bill, today we're going to look at the Rhodey Rams and the Bryant Bulldogs with games set to go in, well, one more day. It'll be a Friday for both.
Oh, can't wait, Kevin. It feels like it's been an especially long offseason this year. I don't know if that's because we had two teams in the NCAAs last year. I don't know if that's because we have such great expectations for this season. But I'm ready to get it started on Friday night. I'm sure you are, too.
No question. We're going to start with the Rams, who right out of the chute have a difficult game. They'll play UNC Asheville. We'll come to the Ryan Center. We'll get into the rest of the Rams' non-conference schedule in a little bit. But, if there's any team that's probably ready to go, it probably is Rhode Island. We're going to touch a little bit about they have one little hiccup here in the last couple of days with some charges being filed against Stan Robinson. But, veterans, deep backcourt in college basketball these days, you either want one-and-done stars or you want really good guards. And Rhode Island certainly has one of the better backcourts in the country.
No, it's a very good collection of guards. Certainly the best in the A-10, I think, depth-wise. The argument has been made that St. Bonaventure has two better players in Jalen Adams and Matt Mobley, but that URI could combat that with just their sheer numbers. You're looking at Jarvis Garrett, Jared Terrell, E.C. Matthews, Jeff Doughton, Stan Robinson, De'Ron Russell, the freshman from Philadelphia. It's a very talented, determined group. You look at the way they practice against each other, and you would want no part of any of those drills or any part of those scrimmages. Those are grown men going at it out there. And that's the group that's going to have to carry URI this year because they have a couple significant losses in the front court. Arguably the best two-way big man in the league in Hassan Martin and, sort of a very valuable do-it-all type of forward in Karan Iverson. And the question for URI going forward this year is how it replaces those two guys.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a very interesting and different style of play for Dan Hurley. He's clearly going to play three and four little guys, if you want to call, E.C. Matthews a little guy. He's, 6'4", 6'5", with long arms. He will play forward. He's not a guard. He's going to play forward for this team. He's going to play wing. He's going to be potentially the best player in the Atlantic 10. And, Bill, he's been slowed a little bit by some knee, I guess you call it tendonitis. By all accounts, though, he should be ready to go.
Yep. It's in the non-surgical knee, the left knee. They've managed him in the preseason. They've given him some time off. I know I caught their practice last Thursday, and he had a one-dribble drive along the left baseline for a dunk over a couple of the big men, and I said, whoa, this doesn't look like a guy who's ailing in any way.
I didn't see that. EC, to his credit, got better and better as the season went along last year, and I can only imagine how anxious he is to get started with his senior year, his fifth year down there in Kingston. And I think, it'll be interesting to see how Dan Hurley utilizes this talent. I think he's clearly going to play three and four of these guys together at all times and also shuttle them in and out. I had thought that maybe someone like Russell, the freshman, wouldn't be able to crack the lineup. But what I saw in the exhibition game against Buffalo, they will find time for Fats Russell. I don't know where. He kind of has one extra guy in that group. But I think Hurley knows that, especially defensively, using all of them at in the same game is really the best way to go.
What he really needs is he needs a second big man to step up beside Cyril Langevine. Whether that's Andre Berry, whether that's Nicola Kelly, whether that's Ryan Preston, the junior college transfer, whether that's even deeper on the bench, Mike Lasard or Michael Tertzia. He needs one extra man to play aside Langevine, who I think is going to be one of the breakout players in the league. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent rebounder. He shows signs of being a decent defender. He is prone to getting into foul trouble, which is going to force URI to play extended periods with maybe a super small lineup where Nicola Kelly plays the five or Ryan Preston plays the five. And if that happens, the question becomes whether or not they want to alter their style of play. We know from watching this team that when they're at their best, they're an elite defensive team. They play half-court basketball. it's almost like bare-knuckle boxing. They force you to work so hard to score against them. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to sacrifice that by playing five smaller guys and trying to speed up the tempo?
I think that's pretty clear that he's going to do that. We're going to see more pressure, full-court pressure, certainly three-quarter pressure by the Rams than we've seen in the past. And when Langevin's not on the floor, to disrupt the game, to disrupt the other team's flow, turnovers, force bad shots, and just get out and transition as much as possible because they just have guys who can make plays at the other end. Langevin's a very important player for them, as you just said, Bill. I think my biggest question will be, can he play? You know, I think last year, you have the stats there, I think he only averaged 13 minutes a game. He has to get into the high 20s, if not 30 minutes a game, which is difficult to do because he is the big guy and he is prone to fouling, but that was as a freshman. It's a big jump to go from 13 minutes a game to 30, but that's really what they need.
Well, to put it in some perspective, you know, Langevin last year played 463 minutes. Hassan Martin played 784. And Hassan Martin only had about 50 more rebounds than Langevin did total. So that tells you what you're dealing with in terms of being in the lane. And if he's around the ball that much, if he's able to be on the floor, his scoring numbers are only going to go up. Mm-hmm. But you can see in that exhibition against Buffalo, he's worked really hard on his skills with the ball in his hands, whether that be finishing around the rim or making his free throws. He shows a much better touch with the basketball, and that's going to be critical going forward because he's going to have these rebounds, especially at the offensive end, these putbacks, and he's going to get hacked. Teams are going to put him to the line and say, look, you were, not a good foul shooter last year. You were 49%. So we're going to put you on there and not give you a layup. And I think it's going to be on him to try and hurt some teams different ways this year. I also think that, it's going to be so critical for just one of those guys to assert themselves next to him. And the fortunate thing for URI is you're not trying to do that with freshmen. Andre Berry's a senior. Granted, he hasn't played that much, but he's an older guy. Nicola Kelly's a junior who has played in spots the last couple of years, but he's got a maturity about him. And then Ryan Preston, a junior college transfer, yes, but still a junior, an older guy. You're not trying to plug those holes with freshmen.
Yeah, and I think Preston, I kind of like him the best of the group. Yet I realize JUCO's always take a little time, could take him until the Atlantic 10 to really find his groove with this team. But left-handed, runs really well, physical, kind of plays the way that Dan Hurley wants to play. And I can see by the time we get to the heat of the Atlantic 10 play, them going with a lineup that features Preston and Cyril together. And we'll see how that plays out. Before we come to Atlantic 10 play, though, Bill, I really got to credit URI with stacking their schedule right out of the chute. Really, clearly, the toughest schedule that Dan Hurley has put together in his now 6 years in Kingston. We'll just go right off the top. UNC Asheville, which is picked to win the Big South, I believe.
Correct.
South. Nevada, who is going to be a candidate to win out in the Mountain West.
Correct.
Holy Cross is Holy Cross, kind of rebuilding situation there. And then the NIT season tip-off over the Thanksgiving weekend. They'll play Seton Hall, which I think could win the Big East. And then in the next game, play either Virginia, who's a fringe top 25 team, and Vanderbilt, which has men, good players. So right out of the chute, Rhode Island's going to be ready to win.
No, it's a brutal schedule. Dan Hurley is scheduled, probably in reaction to what he thinks the league is going to be. The A-10 is going to be a little bit down in terms of the RPI, in terms of the metrics that help determine whether or not you get into the NCAA tournament. And I think he's responded by putting some really good games here on the schedule. They couldn't necessarily get Power 5 games. You play once at Alabama, that's going to be a home and home. But this is very intelligent, what they've done. They've taken some of the best teams out of some, what you would call smaller leagues. Like, you're looking at Iona, who's a perennial contender in the Metro Atlantic. You're playing against Florida Gulf Coast, who's a perennial contender in the Atlantic Sun.
Mm-hmm. Iona?
Right. You're playing Charleston, who's a perennial contender in the CAA. All of those games, and people will say, well, they only have 29 games. You should schedule the maximum of 31. Well, why would you want to play an RPI 300 team? Why would you want to play someone like, pick a team out of the NEC,
yeah,
whoever it might be. Like, let's play Wagner just for the sake of playing Wagner. Why do you want to do that when your schedule is littered with top 100, some fringe top 50 teams, some definite top 25 teams like Seton Hall and Virginia, you know, why would you want to drag down your metrics on the other end? It defeats the whole purpose of what they've done here, which is very intelligent and will help them on Selection Sunday.
No question. They also, but the trick is, and it's funny, we talked about this yesterday with Providence, who also has some difficult non-conference games. You can play these games, but you have to win some of them.
That's right.
And last year, Rhode Island also was very aggressive with their schedule, and they lost a few games that put them behind the eight ball a little bit down the stretch in the Atlantic 10, and to their credit, they really rallied and had a great February. It'll be interesting to see where the Rams stand around Christmas time heading into Atlantic 10 play, because I'd be shocked if they haven't taken a few losses anyways.
No, no question. And Dan Hurley made that point throughout last year. You know, no other team played those three road games like they did at Houston, at Providence. What was the third one?
Out in Valparaiso.
That's right.
Where they stubbed
their toe.
Yep. And as well as, you know, neutral site games against Cincinnati and Duke. It was a rough schedule.
It was really tough. The three road games, they lost. They had chances to win all three. The Cincinnati win, though, sustained them throughout the season. And I look at Seton Hall on Thanksgiving, and that's going to be a similar type of opportunity because, Kevin, I think you and I agree on Seton Hall. You think they can win the Big East. I certainly think that they'll be nowhere worse than in the top 25 of the RPI when the season ends. If Rhode Island is able to win that game on a neutral court, that's the type of win that the selection committee will look at and say, this is a win against an elite opponent. They can clearly play with elite opponents. We have no reservations about putting them in the field. Cincinnati did that for Rhode Island last year. And it's also the type of game that if you beat Seton Hall, that sustains you through Brown into Providence at Alabama. It gives you a major confidence boost and might allow you to sort of put this together a little quicker as Dan Hurley tries to find that right mix going into A-10 play.
And just a little bit on the A-10, I'll be honest with you, Rhode Island is kind of the unanimous pick to win the league. The only prognostication I saw, and I couldn't tell you which publication it was in, was I did see VCU slotted ahead of Rhode Island, who was second in that poll. And I think obviously we'll hit the A-10 heavily when conference play comes around, but I think people are probably sleeping on the Rams a little bit. You know, they have a new coach.
The VCU Rams.
VCU Rams.
Yes.
And they do have a new coach, in Mike Rhodes, but he's really returning to the program, knows we're all everything is, what levers to push. He's heard of the band. He'll be excited about certainly throwing the ball up when the VCU Rams are ready to go. And they've scheduled aggressively, too. They think they're going to be good, have some good transfers in Chris Lane and Isaac Van to throw in with some really good returnees like Justin Tillman and Durante Jenkins. They'll be there. We know that they will be there at the end.
Yeah, Justin Tillman is one of the best big guys in the Atlantic 10. Big, strong, tough rebounder. Dariante Jenkins, I liked what I saw of him a lot last year. He got hurt. He broke his foot. Missed the majority of his freshman season. But when he did play, he flashed pretty well. And then Isaac Van, the folks at St. Bonaventure benefited from Matt Mobley, who came in from Central Connecticut. Isaac Van played for our old friend Bob Walsh up at Maine. A prolific scorer, the type of guard who, can really give you a boost. And he's the type of guy who could make a serious impact on VCU this year. And then you've got some returning guys in there who are just big, strong, tough, typical VCU guys like a Jonathan Williams, who's a senior guard, is a preseason all-defensive team pick. And VCU, I just look at them and I just think they're never going to be an easy out, in particular at home. They have such a huge advantage at the Siegel Center. If you go 8-1 or 9-0 at home, all you have to do is find a way to play .500 on the road. That's 14 wins. That's going to put you in contention to win the league title.
Yep, and you can almost put them down for that. And Dayton as well. Dayton also has a new coach. But, top-of-the-line program, a few key transfers. Those two teams, and St. Bonnie, you already mentioned, with a high-level backcourt, the Atlantic 10s. They do have 3-4 teams that should be able to push the Rhodey Rams all season long. I'm going to switch quickly here to the Bryant Bulldogs. We'll get into their schedule a little bit after we put on Band-Aids and bandages and whatnot, because once again, Tim O'Shea has taken his team around the country for some really difficult games between now and the start of NEC play. The Bulldogs, I think people are probably overlooking them a little bit because of their losses. They have two really difficult transfers in Nisre Zuzwa and Marcel Petway. But O'Shea seems to be really excited about the guys who are replacing them. Number one would be the returning sophomore backcourt of Ikenna and Nduba and Adam Grant, who I think can play at any school in the state. Mm. And then Bosco Coaster, the senior from Australia, who is really getting it done. He looks like a potential all-league guy. So, you know, Brian's different, but I think still should be pretty competitive in the NEC.
Yeah, get the suitcases ready if you're the Bulldogs, right? You know, they just...
Hit it, Bill. Lay it on the people.
Should we just go right ahead and give them what
right
kind of challenges you got here? All right. You've got two home games in November against Navy and against Brown. Around those, you play at Georgia, at North Carolina State, at Rutgers, which you know you could probably bust to. That's not too far.
Much improved, Rutgers.
At Hartford, which you know also a short trip. At Yale, another short trip, but a good team. At New Hampshire, at Albany, and then back on the plane for at Memphis and at Louisville.
Within 3 days, Memphis and Louisville. You know, there's a few schools around the country who wouldn't want to do that double dip. But
so let's fly to Memphis, bus over to Louisville. Ideally, I don't know about the players, but Coach O'Shea and the staff will enjoy some barbecue there.
Beale
you know,
Street
in the pseudo South, a little Beale Street, and you know a little bit in Louisville, and then they come back, you know, for Siena and Dartmouth to round up the non-conference schedule. It's very difficult. You know, Tim has made a point of trying to get some home games, pseudo home games for guys in his program. Like you play at Georgia, that's for Hunter Ware.
Right.
You know, you sort of, he takes that travel as a sort of badge of honor. He feels like that's stealing his team for the NEC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're playing against just some big, strong, athletic, you know, frankly, more talented teams than you are. And I know Coach O'Shea's feeling on that is, that's the only way to find out what you really have.
It is. You know, he's also pretty blunt that, you know, the money, guaranteed money that comes with playing those games fortifies not only his program, but the entire athletic program at Bryant. And got to give the basketball program credit for kind of taking on that challenge. But it also sells the program and broadens the Bryant name. There's still an awful lot of people around the country that who've never heard of Bryant and certainly never heard of Bryant basketball, and this certainly helps. But, you know, Bill, if you really look at the schedule, it puts an awful lot of weight on games like Navy, Brown, and Siena just because you have to win. You know, it's awful hard to go into NEC play with, you know, a 2-10 record, you know, which is really very possible with a schedule like that.
It's true. You need to somehow manage to keep your team's morale somewhere
right
along the way. You know, if you could clip one of these teams, even one of them, you know, even if it's only four wins, but one of those wins is, you know, say at NC State. I mean, that's the kind of validation that, you know, players need. They work so hard, so long in the off season. The practices are so monotonous by this point. I mean, we're in the middle of, you know, the last week before real games. They can't wait to get on the floor. They're tired of doing the same drills. I know the coaching staff's probably tired of doing the same thing. You know, but you ideally, you need to clip one of these teams early. You know, and the great thing about the schedule is also the most difficult thing about the schedule. You have plenty of chances.
Plenty of chances, and, you know, O'Shea will certainly throw his young guys out there right away. He's excited about some new faces. Brandon Carroll was a redshirt freshman, kind of the 6'7", 6'8", you know, pogo stick athlete that the Bulldogs have not had in a while. He's excited about him. Ryan Lehman is the younger brother of NBA Portland Trail Blazer Jake Lehman. Looks just like him without the 20 pounds of muscle, although they list him at 210, and Ryan is vastly, you know, stronger in the 6 months that he's been, you know, since he signed at Bryant. Very good shooter from Rentham, Mass. And they're also excited about Sebastian Towns, who's actually has, he's not a freshman, was a key newcomer last year, but he's the replacement for Marcel Petway. Much more skilled than Marcel, can step away from the basket, shoot the ball well, good free throw shooter. He's unfortunately recovering from some appendicitis and will not be with the team for the first probably 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, the depth is going to be an issue. The youth is going to be an issue. But again, O'Shea likes the versatility of this roster a little better than last year.
I'm just a fan of a guy who has a nickname Bash.
Bash Towns.
I'm in for that, for sure.
Sign me up. And if you look at him, you don't want him to bash you under the glass.
No. Yeah. No. He doesn't mess around in the paint. Going back to what you said earlier, though, the guy who really caught my eye last year was Adam Grant. And going into the season, that Nisrei Zuzwa was going to do his thing. He's one of the best players in the NEC, 20-point-per-game guy. I knew about Ikenna Nduba. He's a Boston native. He played with Expressions Elite, which is a high-level AAU program. You knew that he had some pedigree and that he was going to be a good player. I didn't know as much about Adam Grant. And the first time that I saw him play, his quickness really jumped out to me. The fact that he's an undersized guy at 6'1 and showed no fear going on the rim. Averaged 13 points a game last year, played 36 minutes a game last year. I really think that you're not going to replace Nisrei Zuzwa. He could have been the best player in the NEC this year.
Well, he was the best. Sorry to interrupt. He was the best scorer in the league, but he was a bit of a ball stopper. And I think what they've seen so far is by getting Adam and Akenna and Hunter Weir on the court at the same time, that the ball's moving a little bit better.
And if you're going to have a guy with the sort of characteristics, the sort of moxie to take the big shot, the sort of courage to take on defenders bigger than him, I saw a little bit of that in Adam Grant last year, and I don't think it's unreasonable to think that he can make that sort of jump this year to that 17 to 18 point a game range in that league.
No question. And the preseason, both Adam Grant and Bosco Koster, the senior from Melbourne, Australia, both were NEC honorees and have a chance to be two of the five, if not 10, best players in the league.
Well, now Bosco is one of those guys. I like to say he's like a heat check guy.
Yeah.
He makes one or two threes in a row, and it could turn into six threes in a row. He's got that kind of ability.
And very physical inside, a very good defender, kind of the inside-outside offensive player, but also defensively he can check opposing big guys. So it's going to be a test for Bryant once again just to get through their non-conference season. Last year they missed out on a home game in the NEC playoffs by one game, and that's always what you're looking for in the NEC is to finish in the top four and have a chance to hit the playoffs at home. And then you see what happens. It's a one bid league, and Bryant is still looking to crash through and get their very first NCAA tournament bid. We'll see if this could be the year.
Who do you like there in the NEC?
Everyone always likes St. Francis, PA. I like Mount St. Mary's just because they're always there. That said, they lost two underclassmen to transfer that are just devastating losses. It's similar to Nisrei leaving Bryant. It happened up and down the league in this last offseason. That's another reason why Tim O'Shea is looking forward to this season.
You just said exactly there what I hoped that you were going to say. The NEC has sort of turned into like a farm system for these Power 5 leagues.
Triple A, yeah.
And I think, if you're Bryant, even though you've lost a couple players, it's almost some consolation because every other team is going to lose guys too. I think the NEC is the type of league where, it's not like the ACC or the SEC or even the Big East. You can turn things around quickly. You can have a difficult season and then turn it into a great season the next year. It's just the way the league works, the way the talent level works. If I was Tim O'Shea, even in any given year, I would be excited about the group that I have.
It'll be interesting to see, again, how they can survive through the non-conference and see what happens in the NEC. So, Bill, we will check in again next week after we actually have some games to discuss. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait.